This is Loretta Laird speaking to you today for the Oral History Society for Harford County Library. This is September the 29th, 1974. I am speaking to you from the home of Miss Mary Sewell of Falston. Miss Mary, I suppose you have lived in Falston most of your life, haven't you?
I was born here on this farm. My grandparents came here in 1865. This was a dairy farm belonging to Mr. Daniel P. Hollingsworth. And my grandfather and grandmother lived here, and her children grew up. And in 1882, my father made the first can of ice cream for Mr. Hollingsworth by beating it up with a wooden paddle.
Ah, that sounds interesting.
The ice cream, beating it up with a paddle was quite a chore, and they put in a treadmill, and this, with the horse, furnishing the power, and they did everything with this, crushed ice, made ice cream, skimmed milk, made butter. And then they put in a better system, a big steam boiler, which really furnished enough power. For years, this steam boiler was used until 1908, when the fire destroyed the barn and dairy. From there on, we installed a gasoline engine, and the ice cream was made and butter and with this power. The business went on until 1926, when electrical equipment was put in stores, so ice cream was taken care of. And from there on, we shipped milk, instead of making the ice cream, to the Western Maryland Dairy. Mr. Hollingsworth was a man that was way ahead in his time of thinking. He saw the need for a cooperative to handle the milk business. He went to Annapolis and gave a talk there stating this, and it was established called the Harford Creamery, headquarters in Baltimore. That failed, but later the Maryland Cooperative Milk Producers Association, with the farmers in joy today, was started by this act of Mr. Hollingsworth's. In order to make this ice cream, ice was harvested in the winter. There were two large ice houses holding 300 tons of ice, harvested from two ponds in the summer, and to sell to the neighbors to keep their food cold. Milk was purchased from all the farms for miles around. The farmers delivered the milk in their milk wagons and waited for the milk to be separated, and the skim milk poured into a huge hogshead with a spigot in the side. Then they drew the skim milk off and took it home to feed their hogs and calves. The ice cream was of fine quality and sold rapidly, being made of pure cream and fresh fruits bought locally. In the late fall and winter, when ice cream was not sold in the stores and at public gatherings, the cream was churned into butter in the huge churn and moved to the basement in an elevator. There my father worked it and made it into half-pound prints with sheaves of wheat printed on the top. Surplus butter was sold in Balmer by Mr. Jacob Hunt, who handled the business there for Mr. Hollingsworth. He also sold dressed poultry and pork products in the winter, shipping by the Maryland-Pennsylvania Railroad.
Did you have your own section, Mary, where you could load these things going into Baltimore?
No, we loaded on a platform from the Maryland and Pennsylvania. The Oldsters will remember maybe Mr. Hunt's truck in Balmer, a little truck on the side was Falston Creamery, and he handled the business from there. The business at one time increased to such extent that there were other receiving stations, one at Upper Crossroads, operated by Mr. Roger Irvin, and one at Jarrettsville.
Did you also sell your ice cream as well as to stores and into Baltimore and local places here in Falston?
We sold to stores. A lot of it was delivered to stores. Picnics, festivals. The big days were Cooktown Reunion at Waters Memorial Church, Fork Reunion at Fork in Clayton's Grove, St. Mark's Church here in Falston. And at the close of school, the teachers always treated the children to ice cream. And 4th of July was a big day. It was mostly visiting day in families, and quantities of ice cream were delivered at homes.
Did people come to get it, or did you, I don't suppose you had a delivery service at that time, did you?
Yes, we delivered and had men to dip the ice cream.
Oh. You mean at the festivals
and the Cooktown and all the, we had men to deliver the delivered horses and wagons for many years, and then the men dipped it.
You had your own business as well as delivering and taking care of everything.
That's true.
This business continued for a long time, did it, Miss Mary?
From in the 1880s until 1926, when we stopped making ice cream and then shipped milk to the Western Maryland Dairy.
You told me once that you carried different products that you also butchered in the winter to offset the ice cream.
Yes, in wintertime, quantities of butter. When we kept on buying the milk from the farmers, we had to use it. So we skimmed the milk, made butter, and it was shipped into Baltimore. And poultry, chickens, turkeys, pork products, all winter long to take up the slack from the ice cream business.
And some of the supermarkets changed the way of your life, I suppose.
Well, it was before that that the different stores began to put in these ice boxes, and they could handle the ice cream much faster than we could.
The name, I believe, of your property here was called Salem. How did that name come about, Miss Mary?
The name Salem means peace, and all the Quakers were predominating in this neighborhood. The Quaker meeting in Falston was filled every Sunday, and their farms were all named, and like Rochelle, Bonaire, La Vista. Of course, this was Salem, and when they visited, they didn't say, "I'm going to see so-and-so." They said, "I'm going to Rochelle," or "I'm going to Bonaire." Mm-hmm. Every farm had its name, and that's the way they spoke when they visited. And the whole countryside was predominantly Quaker. And the Quaker meeting, of course, still stands in this very lovely old stone building.
Didn't we have Quaker meetings here, quarterly meetings? Are they held everywhere in the Harford County, or was Falston one of the leading?
A quarterly meeting met in Falston in each November. They came on Saturday. I recall very well that my father always butchered a pig or two, and they got ready to entertain these Quakers that here at Mr. Hollingsworth, who drove for miles and put up their horses, and they had a meeting Saturday afternoon, and then all day meeting Sunday, and stayed over Sunday night, and they had a meeting Monday morning, closing at noon. This was a big day in those days because they had to drive so many miles, and the food, I imagine, was most delicious because they certainly did make preparation for it.
When they stayed over, did they stay at individual homes?
Yes, they stayed in all the different homes around. The homes, these old farmhouses were pretty good size and they could house a lot of people.
Was this just for Harford County or were other...
Oh no, they came from Baltimore, Sandy Springs, Gunpowder over near Parkton. It was a more or less a state affair. The Quakers are peace-loving people, and I have a friend who lives not far away, and I still ask her why she had a meeting named Gunpowder.
What is her answer to that?
She doesn't answer that too readily.
Well, that, of course, was from the river, I suppose.
I think so. I think so.
Tell me something about the Quaker Meeting House, Mary. It's a beautiful place. I have attended a funeral, but that's about all.
There was quite a number of Quakers, many of them Hollingsworths. The meeting house is divided, and the men sit on one side and the women on the other. The men kept their hats on. Why, I don't know. And they rode horseback, and of course in those days they had to. And the whole down around Wilna was so many Quakers. And of course all these farms around Falston here were owned by Quakers. They still have their regular meetings. They don't have a large attendance, but they still have the meetings, and they have a lovely cemetery. Their grounds are beautiful.
I have recollections of the community meetings that were held at the Quaker meeting grounds, and I believe that you were a soloist at those, weren't you, Miss Mary?
Yes, I used to help a little.
Tell me about that.
On December the 6th, 1920, Mr. Caleb J. Moore, a member of Little Falls Friends Meeting, called a meeting in his home of representatives from each church and organization to form a community council. At this time, there were no services being held in the churches on Sunday evening in the community. Therefore, the purpose of the council was to arrange for services in the Friends Grove during July and August. The plan was to use the meeting house porch for a large chorus made up of choirs from the local churches, and for the speaker. Each church cooperating was asked to have their local speaker and one outside speaker representing their denomination. The first Falston Community Song Service was held on July 3rd, 1921, with Dr. Benson Howard Roberts, pastor of Falston Presbyterian Church, as speaker. His subject was community ideals. For 35 years, these meetings continued with excellent speakers and music each Sunday evening with large and attentive audiences. During the meetings, usually in the month of August, a community picnic was held in the Friends Grove, where neighbors and friends brought a basket lunch and enjoyed a day of fun for the children and real happy get-together for the old folks. In 1956, the churches again provided Sunday evening services for their young people, and most homes had televisions. Folks seemed to lose interest in this meeting, so the council voted to discontinue the services. However, a free will offering had been taken at each meeting to take care of expenses pertaining to the meetings. At the close of these, after the organ and speaking system was sold for $109, the balance in the treasury was $350. Since the money had been given by the community, the council voted to give this balance for a community project, namely the Harford Memorial Hospital. This was gratefully received.
Very interesting. So it looks like TV ruined the very good thing.
Yes.
Do you think they could be held today, Miss Mary?
I don't know. Most of the churches now have young people's groups. And I really don't know. They were largely attended at that time.
Well, it was a forerunner of the church councils, or the get-together, wasn't it, of
yes.
all churches?
Well, Mr. Moore was quite a public-spirited man and a wonderful man, and he brought the people together, and the churches cooperated beautifully. They allowed money to be paid, expenses for their outside speakers. And we had some wonderful speakers during that time. And people came for miles to these services.
It would seem to me that people could think ahead and do things more than today.
I think so, too.
It was the interesting, well, it was just a different way of life
That's
than
right.
we have.
Very much so.
Were there a great number of people who attended these community meetings, Mary?
Many. We estimated as high as 500 there when we had an outstanding speaker. The Friends used to have Dr. Forbush often, who was headmaster of the Friends School in Baltimore, a very fine speaker. They had Dr. Janney, who was a fine speaker. The Presbyterians had Dr. McCormick at one time, who used to preach at Slateville Presbyterian Church above Delta, and came here from Philadelphia to address our meeting on a Sunday evening. We had Dr. Caldwell from Waverly Church, or no, Walbrook Church, I guess it was, Secretary of the Presbyterian Balmer, who spoke for us. The Methodists had some of their outstanding men. And
did you have any local people who were...
Each church was... The local speaker in each church was responsible for one evening. And then the other was men we got from the outstanding men in each denomination that we could possibly get to come. We also had special singing, like quartets, duets, and solos by as many outsiders as we could get.
Did they bring their own organist or their own piano player?
Sometimes, and then sometimes not. Churchville had Dr. Hawkins, who played for us on several occasions. Mr. Charles H. McComas, who directed the Choral Club in Bel Air for a number of years, was one of our soloists, and his brothers, who were prominent singers, helped with quartets.
This is side two.
I would like to tell you about the Fresh Air Farm.
Oh, good.
The Fresh Air Farm was first located on a hillside just above Winter's Run on Country Life Farm and was called Camp Endeavor. It was organized by the Christian Endeavor Society of Brown Memorial Presbyterian Church, and so hence the name Camp Endeavor. Only boys from Baltimore came at first. They slept in tents. This only lasted a short time when Dunkale Farm, owned by the Hoskins family on Whitaker's Mill Road, a short distance from Benson, was purchased and the name changed to the Fresh Air Farm. The children were transported from Baltimore on the Ma and Pa Railroad to Falston. They numbered about 250 to 300. They were met at the station by two large horse-drawn wagons. One wagon required four horses and the other three horses. the wagons that were owned by the farm, the horses, by Mr. John Magnus, who lived at Whitaker's Mill, near the farm. The horses were driven by his sons. The children spent 10 days. Girls had been added to the number when the farm was purchased. They slept in the big old farmhouse. The boys slept in dormitories. The large stone barn was the dining room, and a kitchen was built on the barn. This barn is beautiful. I'm judging that it was made from fieldstone, possibly by slave labor, and is now being used by the Baptist church who bought the farm for public suppers. It's a most beautiful building.
What year do you suppose, Mary, that it would have been built? Do you have any idea?
I haven't any idea. It was very old. A nurse was always on hand to look after the children's health, and a number of counselors who took care of all but in groups. Plenty of fresh vegetables, good fresh milk, and twice a week Salem Creamy furnished the ice cream for dessert. The children came in groups from the close of school, spending 10 days each group until school opened in September. At first, this project was sponsored by volunteer groups, churches, civic organizations, and children in the city held street fairs on the sidewalk near their homes, giving the proceeds to the cause. Daily reports on these were given in the evening paper. I think it was wonderful in those days that the children could have these little fairs and raise all this money, and nobody disturbed them, and what a wonderful way it was for the children with better privileges to have these little things and turn all that money in as volunteers for the cause.
To help underprivileged.
Yeah, underprivileged. This cause now is financed by the United Appeal. This present location has been sold to the Baptist Church, and they are having a camp there each summer. They're keeping it beautiful. And the new location of the Fresh Air Farm is near the rocks of Deer Creek, that street.
Do you know if it still operates the same way? Do they bring them out, I guess, by buses?
They bring by buses now, but they rode the train for a number of years, and then the buses brought them. It's been kept up for a long while, and it's a wonderful project. And they had some children that were sick. One or two especially, I remember. I don't know whether they were crippled or what, but they kept them all the season, the whole season, and took care of them there. I was there one evening when they had Vespers, and the children sang from the porch of the big old home, and I've never heard the hymn Trust and Obey sung with such vim and vigor as those children sang it. It was lovely. And then the Kiwanis Club gave a swimming pool, and a big hall was added to the buildings where they had all kinds of entertainment for them and Sunday services. I hated to see that locality change because it's such a beautiful setting. But I have never been to the rocks. I don't know what there is, but it's mostly in the woodland there.
I haven't been up there either. I don't know. But it still operates under this, except that the help comes from a different source today, I suppose, you said.
Well, there's, yes, uh-huh. United Appeal, it comes uh-huh. under that. And for the meals, a lot of people around here work there to help to serve the meals yet.
I wonder if the number's the same today, or are there more who come?
I don't know. I don't know. I haven't been actively connected with it for a good long while. Mr. Walter Sellers and his son Lawrence were two of the managers there, and they raised a quantity of vegetables to feed all these children. The first manager I knew was Mr. Souter, Mr. and Mrs. Souter. And then when they retired, there was a Mr. and Mrs. Dorsey. And they got way up in years and couldn't keep up. And then Mr. Sellers and Lawrence took charge. And then at Mr. Sellers' death, Lawrence was manager for a number of years. And they certainly did raise the food to help with the cost of maintaining it.
That's extremely interesting. That's the good old days again that we talk about.
Yes, it was lovely.
And your Falston Creamery still playing a part.
Yes, we served them ice cream. I think about those children holding street fairs and how interested they were in the things they sold and how they took part in this relief for the underprivileged. And there was never any disturbance, or the city was most peaceful. And what a wonderful thought it was for those children.
Well, don't you think they gained too?
Oh, they gained a lot, sure.
By helping.
They got a lot out of it by helping these children. They certainly did. And the figures were in the paper each evening. You could get the evening paper, and there was their proceeds of what they'd made. And they had something nearly every day in the week to, I guess they sold snowballs and candy and what have you, and they turned the money all over for the camp.
I'm sure it was very gratifying to them.
Very, very much so. Very much so.
Music has always been a love of yours, and I think Falston had its share of good musical groups, didn't it?
I think so. For a number of years, the AME churches of the circuit, of which a Tabernacle Church near Benson was a part, would rent the woodland on Salem Farm to hold their annual camp meeting. It will be held every Sunday evening for a period from 4 to 6 weeks. The Ma and Pa Railroad built a special platform at the intersection of the railroad and Laurel Brook Road, and the trains stopped there so that those attending the meetings from Balmer, Bel Air, and many other stations would have a convenient place to get on and off. To attend these meetings. Delicious meals were served twice a day for those attending. Three services, morning, afternoon, and evening. And plenty of ice cream was sold during the day, made at Salem Creamery. Many guests attended the evening services just to listen to the beautiful music.
Was it mostly hymns?
Yes.
All hymns?
Mm-hmm. And they had, the music was lovely. And they had people from Baltimore that came out and sang, and different groups from various churches.
Well, it would seem that Salem played quite a part in early Falston history.
I think so.
People would know about your business as well as your own association with the churches, Mary, wouldn't they?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Did any other member of your family sing or take part?
No, not at that, but I think I inherited my voice from a mother.
Oh, splendid. Did she ever sing? I never knew your mother.
My mother died when I was very young.
Oh, uh-huh.
But I must have gotten it there, as near as I can figure.
I think Falston has many other interesting places, Mary. I wonder if you'd tell me a little bit about Curtis Institute.
Mr. Curtis was a New Englander, if I understand it right, and he came here to Maryland, and he married Mary Ellen Lewis. They were from down near Joppa. That school was outstanding. It was a boarding school. People went there, and children had stayed, and of course they had to ride horses and drive and so on. Mr. Elijah Somerville, our former county surveyor, was one of the scholars of Oakland School. He came here at my home one day and delivered an address on nature study, and he was really familiar with nature. And one of the Curtis sisters were here. There were five sisters and one brother. And he came here and he said he was glad to meet one of his former teacher's daughters. And he said he remembered in those days that he had to get some money to pay tuition. And Mr. Curtis came to see him and said, "Elijah, you're coming back to school this fall?" And he said, "If I can get enough corn to cut, pay my dues, tuition, I'll be there." So he said he found the corn and cut the corn and came back. And he was quite an outstanding surveyor. Mm-hmm. He drew the design for the racetrack, the old racetrack on the fairground, Harford Fair. Miss Eva Curtis showed me the drawing. And in his surveying, I think there wasn't many wildflowers or bushes of any kind that he missed. And the history of Falston that was written several years ago, there's a list of the as many names that they could get together from those attending Curtis School. We're selling on this little history on the fourth edition. And it's surprising how many people have bought this book just for that list of names mm-hmm. to be handed down. Mm-hmm. There's been several sold in one family just for that purpose. Mm-hmm. Mr. Curtis turned out some very brilliant people. And I don't know how many years the school was in existence, but it certainly filled the bill at one time around here.
I was always so interested because my father was a student at Curtis Institute. I think I always heard that all of the classes were such outstanding ones.
That's
and
right.
It was mostly taught by the Curtis family, wasn't it?
Yes, I think so. The and after the sisters took a part in the teaching. And I don't know just how many years it was in existence. But Mr. Curtis turned out some wonderful students. It was quite an addition to Harford County.
Is there any member of the family still living? Isn't one still living?
No, Miss Ethel, who was my first teacher in Falston School, died about 3 years ago at the age of 96.
Is that right? The school itself was burned, wasn't it?
Oh, yes, I was so sorry that happened. But and there were some valuable things in the old home. The stairway was beautiful. Mr. Curtis's library, where they're in style again now, but they wasn't for years. It was inside shutters. And he had a huge library. And the wood in that house, I think, was walnut. And fireplaces practically in every room, upstairs and down. And I was certainly sorry to see it burned, because there were some valuable things in there.
I don't suppose there were any members of the family that left where anything was passed on. Was it to anyone else, any living relative?
I don't. They handed it down from one to the other mm-hmm. as they passed on. And what was the final on it, I don't know.
I was wondering on the library if any were saved, or was all that lost?
There was quite a few fine things in the home they gave to friends. The ladies in their later life traveled in Europe, and they each had a collection. One collected candlesticks, and one collected bells, and one collected bottles, and one collected fine china, and one had was interested in television. She is Miss Marion, taught in Europe, in Spain for a long time. The brother was killed earlier in life, and it was quite a farm to it. He stayed there and farmed the land. And their pet things, like these collections, they disposed of them before their death. To give to different members of their friends of theirs. About the finals on it, I don't know, but I certainly did hate to see it burned.
I can remember a patio that I think it must have been Miss Marion that,
yes,
that fashioned it from some place that she stayed in.
That's
Spain.
Right.
Is that
right?
Correct?
That's correct. It was lovely. Had it back of the dining room. I think there were 27 rooms in that house.
You would probably have to be.
And when they divided up, the one that collected bells got the bell in the belfry.
Oh.
And that sister had bells from little tiny ones up to the big one in the belfry. The one that collected bottles had bottles from an inch high to demijohns. And one collected little dogs, china. It was quite a collection. It was a delightful place to visit.
Do you have any recollections, Mary, of gypsies in Falston? They always talk a great deal in remembering about gypsies moving through. Did we ever have any come through here?
I imagine so. The only one I remember, there was a group came through here selling baskets. And I have a basket that I keep a flower in. And that was made from the woods, wood in the woodland. It was made from sassafras. And they sold them through here, very reasonable. But that's the only group I can remember. There may have been more earlier, but that's only one I can remember.
What do you think of Falston today?
Well, it's a little too modern for me. It's practically a town now.
Many of your neighbors' farms, you spoke of Rochelle, is now a
development.
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 It's difficult to tell one road from another now, isn't it?
Well, people used to come around and ask me, can you tell me where I can find so-and-so, and I could usually tell them. Now I can't tell them anything. I don't know anybody. I don't know whether it adds to it or not. I still like rural life.
Well, we still have some.
Yes.
We still have some.
But even the churches have changed. I mean, there's not that friendliness and that get-together. Like, after church, people used to visit for I don't know how long out in the churchyard before they went home.
Mm-hmm. What do you think? Is there too many that we just don't know? What do you think about that?
I think, too, there's so many city people that treat the country church the same as they did in the city. Mm-hmm. They don't bother speaking, except in a very few city churches. And I don't think this adds to the community, really.
A little lacking in warmth.
I think so. I think so.
Mm-hmm.
Very different.
Getting back to your farm originally, I suppose you had a great many horses, did you?
Oh, yes. We had always a stable full of horses, and then we had an extra stable where we housed horses for Mr. Will Record, who lived at Kingsville and run the pole business, like telephone poles.
Oh.
and oh, I don't know how many horses and mules he housed here all the time. A special long stable was built to take care of those mules and horses. Logging was all done then with horses and mules. And we always had a nice lot of colts and a lot of fun breaking them. And
did you ever help with any of that? Did you like, were you a horsewoman?
No, not especially. Not especially. But I've seen the men hitch them and drive them. Take a cart with long shafts and hook them so they couldn't, or hook two together. Take a young one and hook with an old one. And so they couldn't run away, and that's the way they broke them in usually.
I suppose that wasn't too much a woman's world.
No, it was not at that time, no. No.
Do you see a great deal of difference today with the women's world?
Yes, I think so. There's so many women work today, so many people, women in public life. In my day, there wasn't jobs for women, you know, earlier. Mm-hmm. But to meet the rising cost today, everybody has to work.
I always ask the question, with the liberated woman, what do you think today? Do you think it was better in the good old ice cream days?
No, I don't think so. I think it's nice for women to get out more than they used to. But I think with the woman and her family, that centers around the children, I think a mother in a home is an institution that we'll never get away from, really should never get away from.
Hopefully not.
No, hopefully not.
Is there anything else you would like to tell me about the Falston Creamery?
I don't know about the creamery, but we had two big canning houses here at one time, the canning industry.
Oh. Also operating from Salem?
No, that was...
you mean here in Falston?
Here in Falston.
Oh.
W. Robinson's cannery on Watervale Road, and George Smith at Benson, Joseph Archer at Wilna, Mr. Scott Robinson, and this connects with the railroad. They shipped quantities of canned goods from Maryland, Pennsylvania, some at Watervale, most at Falston. Canning was a big industry, and certainly did help the farmer in growing the crop. Most of the farmers grew the tomatoes and corn. It was canned right here in the locality.
Falston was a focal point in more ways than one,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah, I should say, mm-hmm. Yes.
That's very interesting. I had forgotten about the canneries.
Then we had two big warehouses. One here next to the Maryland Pennsylvania Railroad, which was operated by Mr. Robinson. I remember spring of the year, just one big four-horse team after another hauling lime and fertilizer, and through the winter feed, quantities of feed from the right here at Falston Coal. My father used to, in winter time when work was slack, we hauled coal for families all around here from this warehouse owned by Mr. Robinson. And Mr. D.J. Shanahan had a warehouse. Then Mr. Robinson bought both of them, both warehouses. There was a mill in the one where they did grinding. And
that was right here in Falston?
Right here in Falston. One was back of the store at Falston, and the other was beside it, which is now an apartment house.
Yeah. Oh, that's brand new to me. I never knew we had a mill right here. I knew we had the
Mr. Howard Mitchell run it for a long while for Mr. Shanahan. Ground feed.
Would the wheel and all still be there? Is that
no,
the Mr.
it wasn't
Holland's
that.
Place?
Well, no, it was run by, his mill was operated by a gasoline engine. there was no water power here, you see.
Uh-huh.
Now, over, of course, Mr. Robinson's was next to the Winter's Run. There was another big industry right there beside him, the Rockdale Mill, owned by Mr. J.C. Carr for a number of years. Across the stream from Mr. Robinson's canning house. There was a lot of employment through those places. Great help to the community. Mr. Harlan now owns one of those warehouses that Mr. Robinson used to have.
Well, Mary, I certainly thank you very much for this wonderful afternoon. We appreciate it from the Oral History Society. We shall keep this on record. Hope you hear it someday.
Thank you. I hope so, too. Glad I could help you.
Oh.